Insects have a cuticular exoskeleton, and in this topic we'll be looking at the structure and function of the cuticle and the underlying epidermis, which together are called the integument. We're going to be looking at some of the variations in cuticle composition and form. Insects are incredibly diverse and we can't cover all of them, but you'll just get an appreciation of the variability within cuticle to perform different functions. And also, the cuticle is internalized in some of the insect's organs, and especially the respiratory system. Cuticle-lined tubes called trachea provide air into the insect's body and allow for the release of CO2. Okay, the cuticle is the insect's interface with its environment. Everything that we see on the outside of an insect is cuticle. And it varies from being very soft and flexible, if we think of the wings of a flying insect, to very hard, if we think about the thorax, for example, of a beetle or coleoptera. So the cuticle also has to be adaptable to provide the different functions required for it. For example, sensory information has to be relayed to the animal, to the cells inside the body, the nervous system. So how does that happen? There are a lot of adaptations of the cuticle to allow, for example, light to pass through cuticle. The cuticle covering the eyes is transparent. There are cuticular structures that, when they're cuticular hairs, that when they're moved, they squeeze a neuron that's lying underneath the cuticle. Also, the legs and the wings are cuticular based, but the legs have internal muscles. And the wings have a lot of veins that provide ridges that cause it to provide support so that the wings don't collapse when they're flapped. There's a lot of internal cuticle as well. That there are cuticular ridges called apodemes that move inwards from the outside of the body, and that's where the muscles attach internally. Also, the cuticle provides support for the internal organs. And it provides the respiratory system. And in fact, if you do a dissection of an insect, you'll find that the internal trachea, which are part of the respiratory system, actually are binding to the different organs within the body, and they act more or less like a connective tissue holding the organs within the body, and then another layer of cuticle obviously forms the exoskeleton on the outside. Just a reminder, just remember the names of the main plates of cuticle. The pterygoid is the dorsal plate, the sternite is the ventral plate, and the pleurite is the side plates. Okay, let's have a look at the cuticle structure. This is a diagram taken from your textbook, and this is very diagrammatic, obviously. And the cuticle shown here is quite thick. This would be a very hard and thickened part of cuticle of an insect. What we can see is that there's an underlying layer of epidermal cells. Now, people tend to think of the cuticle as just an inert, dead substance, but the cuticle always remains intimately associated with the epidermal cells that secrete it. So cuticle can be regarded as almost a living thing. They're not cellular, they're extracellular, but the epidermal cells beneath the cuticle are constantly providing secretions into the cuticle, or they might be secreting a new cuticle. And we'll look at their role in molting in the next mini lecture. So the epidermal cells secrete the cuticle. Just where the interface between the cuticle and the epidermal cells is, in a zone called the formation zone, the epidermal cells have very, very fine microvilli. And these microvilli are actively secreting cuticle in the molting cycle. Now let's look at some of the layers of cuticle. As cuticle thickens, because the epidermal cells have secreted multiple layers, it can change its nature. There's the formation zone directly above the epidermis, and then a thick layer of procuticle, which is itself divided up into endocuticle and exocuticle. And on the outside is a thin, very thin layer of epicuticle. You'll notice here that we've also got in this diagram a dermal gland cell. These dermal glands achieve the function of sending secretions to the outside of the cuticle. Now, the cuticle is relatively impermeable by its nature. Most cuticle is, because it has to provide a barrier for the insect to prevent dehydration. It's water loss. So by that nature, it's hard for insects to get secretions across the cuticle. And the way they overcome this is to have these dermal glands that secrete into a lumen within the gland cell, and that secretion goes all the way through the cuticle along the duct of the gland. There are also pore canals within the cuticle, much finer canals that carry the waxes to the outside, to the epicuticle layer, and they're shown as the vertical dark lines in this diagram. Now, this cuticle, as I mentioned, is very thickened. There are some cuticles that are very, very thin and very flexible. So this is just a diagram. Now, what is cuticle made of? Well, one of the main components is chitin, which is a polysaccharide, and the procuticle contains very large amounts of this chitin, chitinous material. Now, if you break a piece of thickened cuticle, such as we see here, we can see that the orientation of the chitin fibers changes from layer to layer. So it's called lamellate cuticle. Now, this change in layering is believed to be due to those microvilli on the epidermal cells actually moving backwards and forwards while they're secreting cuticle, while they're releasing the chitin. And if they're moving in one plane, the chitin fibers are oriented one way. And then, maybe the next day, they slightly change their orientation, their movement, and they're secreting chitin that's oriented slightly differently. So as you move through the different layers of the cuticle, you'll find that the layers are oriented in different directions, in a helicoidal fashion, so that they have this spiral appearance in cross-section. This is believed to provide a lot of strength to the cuticle by changing orientation. It's like laying layers of fiberglass on top of each other. If you want to be strong, you change the orientation from one layer to the next. The outer epicuticle is a layer that's very frequently waxy, and there's some cement there as well. Now, the wax has a very important function in repelling water from the outside and also preventing water loss from the inner cuticle and the epidermal cells and the internal parts of the body. So this wax layer is very important for insects. That if the wax layer is removed, insects can dehydrate quite quickly. Now, there's also another important aspect to the wax layer, and is that many insects secrete cuticular hydrocarbons in this waxy layer. And these cuticular hydrocarbons are often provide contact taste cues to other insects about the hormonal state of the insect. Males, for example, male flies have one set of cuticular hydrocarbons. Female flies have another set of cuticular hydrocarbons. So when flies touch each other, they can taste those cuticular hydrocarbons and tell whether the other individual is a male or a female. Cockroaches have a lot of dermal glands that secrete cuticular hydrocarbons into the cuticle, and they're what provide that very characteristic foul smell associated with cockroaches. Some cuticular hydrocarbons are produced by enocytes, and some are produced by the dermal glands. Now, much cuticle is sclerotized, and an alternative word for that is tanned. We mean by that the cuticle is dark and relatively hard. So in these images here, they're honeypot ants. And the reason I've chosen them is because they show the difference between the sclerotized and the unsclerotized cuticle quite strongly. The sclerotized cuticle are the darker components, and you can see as the honeypot ants, as their body is expanding, those sclerotized or tanned parts of the cuticle don't expand a lot, so they're not very flexible. Whereas what has expanded is the thin, non-sclerotized cuticle between the main sclerites. That's the arthrodial membranes, and they're very thin and flexible, so they provide the flexibility between segments. If we look very closely at an insect's leg, the flexibility at the joints is due to the same type of cuticle this non-sclerotized, thin, stretchy cuticle at the joints. So there are different types of cuticle on the external part of the body. Some provide flexibility, the others provide strength. The dark pigment called melanin is formed as part of the process of tanning cuticles, so that's why it's frequently very dark when it's sclerotized. Now, insects can have many additives in cuticle, protein additives that change the nature of the cuticle. And one of the most fascinating ones is this protein called resilin. It was discovered and given its name in the 60s, and it was called resilin because it's an extremely rubbery cuticle. Now, resilin, one of its characteristics is that it fluoresces blue under ultraviolet light. So if you can take pieces of an insect and put them under ultraviolet light under a fluorescence microscope, the areas of resilin fluoresce strongly blue. Now, if you look at the externally at the base of the wing, where the wing articulates on the thorax, there are characteristic ultraviolet blue fluorescing areas underneath the wings. So many insects have resilin at the wing bases, the reason being that the wings have to flap many times and the cuticle there has to be able to withstand, has to be extremely flexible so that it doesn't crack after millions of deformations due to the wing flapping. One of the original researchers who discovered resilin also found that there are a couple of major resilin, what are called pads, and one of these is in the ligament where particular muscles of a dragonfly insert on the metathorax, which I've circled here in this diagram. Just the cuticular tendon where the blue part, where the pinker muscle inserts on the tendon and then the tendon itself inserts on the external cuticle. Now, there's a large clump of resilin there, which is shown on the right-hand side, photographed under ultraviolet light, showing the characteristic blue fluorescence. And Weiss Foh, the researcher who discovered this piece of resilin, was able to take it out of dragonflies and then place it under force transducers and was able to measure the flexibility. And he claimed that resilin was one of the most extraordinarily flexible compounds known. Subsequent research also showed that resilin has an important role in allowing fleas to make those prodigious leaps that they're capable of. Fleas have lost their wings, their apteris, but internally in the metathorax, just above where the metathoracic legs insert on the thorax, there's an internal series of struts shown in this microscope slide of a cat flea. And when you view this under the fluorescence microscope, you can see that there's a almost like a ball and socket structure where there's a major pad of resilin. And it seems that this is where the insect stores energy for a jump. The legs are brought up. There are actually little notches and pegs in the legs that allow the legs to sort of be held in a withdrawn position, a crouched position, and then there's a muscle movement allowing all of the energy to be released, and a lot of the energy is stored in the resilin pad, and the flea jumps, boing, it takes off and can make these massive leaps. Now, I was involved in a project where a CSIRO researcher just over the road decided to try and make synthetic resilin, and the clever way that he went about this was to look for the resilin coding gene from the newly available genome of Drosophila melanogaster. That's a small fruit fly that much genetic research has been done on, and the first insect whose whole genome was sequenced. He was able to find that gene, and then wanting to make the pro-resilin, which is the precursor to resilin, he placed that gene inside bacteria and then grew the bacteria in very large numbers in incubators, and then extracted the pro-resilin and was able to cross-link the pro-resilin in the way that insects need to cross-link it as they're secreting it from the epidermal cells. And he was able to cast this artificial resin, and this picture here is some artificial resin that was poured into a glass capillary tube and then taken out of the tube, and it's shown on the top in natural light and below under showing its fluorescence characteristics. And then once again, this could be, the properties could be determined, and it was found to be the most flexible substance known, more resilient than any known rubber that humans have been able to make. Now, cuticles have many different functions, and some of them are pretty severe. If you think of the mandibles of, for example, a leaf-cutting insect, they have to be able to cut through leaves continuously throughout their life cycle. And the potential there is there for the cuticular structures to be worn down. And in fact, when people have looked at the mandibles of insects such as leafcutter ants, they find that they actually concentrate metals in the cuticle there. So leafcutters have zinc in the mandibles. And there are other metals associated with these hard-wearing surfaces of insects. In pupae of Diptera, there's quite a few different calcium compounds present, which seem to provide a hardness and prevent parasitoids being able to penetrate through the cuticular case of the pupa. Here's a scanning electron micrograph of the mandibles of a larval caterpillar, and the metal would be concentrated in the tooth-like structures on those mandibles. Now, another characteristic of insect cuticle is the brilliant and beautiful colours that can be achieved by some insects. Butterfly collectors are probably drawn into their hobby through the beautiful patterns of scales on the butterfly wings. Similarly, beetles can have beautiful patterns of light reflected from their cuticle. There are many different ways that cuticle can produce colours, and there's a lot of ongoing research in this area, and I'd suggest that if you can read this article by Parker and Martini on structural colour in animals, which is relatively recent, and it's a nice update of the different ways that insect cuticle can produce different colours. One way is to produce interference colours, where the light waves interact as they reflect off tiny ridges in the cuticle. That's how butterfly scales produce colour. I'll upload a movie so that you can see the scanning electron micrographs of butterfly wings and how they produce these the scales and how they produce these interference colours. Light scattering occurs, as in the beetles shown here on the top. And fairly recently, this paper showed that the way some weevils, and in this case it was a weevil from tropical North Queensland, they produce colours through an opal-like mechanism, and opals produce their colours through a packing of small spheres, so they have particular photonic effects, or what they call photonic crystals. These are some of the most spectacular examples, but many of the examples of insect colour are maybe not so spectacular, but they're due to pigments in the epidermal cells or the cuticle that reflect one colour and absorb others. So sometimes the pigments are present in cells beneath the cuticle, and other times they're present in the cuticle themselves. If we think about the colourful eyes of some insects, eyes have the ommatidia, or units of the eyes. There are pigment-containing cells lining beneath the cuticular surface, and they have an impact on the insect's visual ability, and they also produce a particular colour in the eye, very frequently a reddish colour or a dark colour. Now, insects use cuticle for camouflage as well. Camouflage is often called crypsis, and it involves shape, colour and behaviour. So not only does the cuticular colour have an impact, the actual shape of the insect may have to be adapted to provide the camouflage. On the top right, there's a beautiful orchid mantid, and you can see its colour and the cuticular protrusions. Many of them, that they're adapted for camouflage purposes. And if you want to have a laugh, go to the website that I've shown on the bottom right there to show some insect camouflage. Now, we think of the cuticle as something that's on the outside of insects. And that's where the majority of the cuticle is, but the internal respiratory system is cuticle-lined as well. Have you ever thought of why insects are generally relatively small compared to, say, mammals? Mammals can be as big as a whale or an elephant, whereas the largest insect can probably still fit in our hand. And the reason for that is because they have an external skeleton or exoskeleton, as the insect gets bigger and bigger, that external skeleton has to become proportionally thicker and thicker, so that there's a limit to the size an insect can grow before the cuticle is so thick to support the body that the animal is incapable of moving. There's that side of it, and then the other side of it is their ability to get air into the tissues, oxygen into the tissues. Now, mammals have lungs, which is they have a circulatory system, which is their way of getting oxygen to the tissues and carbon dioxide away from the tissues. Insects don't have lungs like that. So what they've evolved is an internalization of the external skeleton, which are trachea. So they've sort of brought the outside in, and the way they get oxygen in is to really increase the surface area of their body by having these internalized tracheal tubes. So the full, complete respiratory system is cuticle-lined. So if ever you dissect an insect, you will see many of these silvery tubes inside the insect. In this diagram here at the top, you can see it's a generalized section through an insect. Most insects have this pair of lateral tracheal trunks. There are branches from them that go down to the ventral part of the body where the nerve cord is, or up to the dorsal part of the body where the equivalent of the heart in insects is known as the dorsal vessel is located, and branches going into the gut. And you'll find that tissues that have a very high metabolic activity, such as the developing ovaries of females, have a very dense tracheal supply because they're metabolically active. They need a lot of air. They need to get rid of a lot of CO2. Similarly, the muscles have a rich tracheal supply. Now, the trachea are quite visible, but when they're getting into the tissues themselves, they become very, very fine, and the finest processes are called tracheoles. They run in between individual cells. They don't actually penetrate into the cell itself. The cell membrane remains complete. But you'll find tracheoles running between cells to provide oxygen and remove carbon dioxide. Now, insects need to get air into those spiracles, and they do that, air into the tracheal system, and they do that via the spiracles. The spiracles can be highly structured in some insects. As you see on the bottom left here, there are filter structures that prevent dust or mites or water getting into the tracheal system. So they can have this complex architecture within the spiracle. And some insects can actually open and close spiracles, so they have hinged shutters over the spiracles. What I've shown here is confocal microscope images of the spiracles the trachea of Drosophila. You can see on the top where the individual nuclei of the epidermal cells around the trachea, they're red coded, and you can see the borders of those cells with their coloured green, and they show this sort of hexagonal or octagonal. Hexagonal sort of structure where they're patterned as they join up to each other. These cells are very flattened. If you look at the image below, which is a single image plane through this series of images taken through a trachea, you can see that the epidermal cells are quite thin and the nucleus is not round. It's very flattened when you look at it in profile. But these tooth-like red fluorescing structures are what are called tenidia. The tenidia are cuticular structures that protrude into the lumen of the trachea. So it's they provide strength to the trachea to prevent them from collapsing. The closest similarity, I guess, would be to the tube of a vacuum cleaner that has those circular ridges in the tube. Obviously, the reason for that is to stop the tube from collapsing as it's bent. Same structure, same function of the of these internal cuticular ridges. So during development, the tracheal epidermal cells will secrete the tinnidia and then retreat back and secrete the rest of the basal cuticle, but they stay associated with the trachea. On the left-hand side is a diagram of a photograph of a damselfly nymph, and this animal, because it's aquatic, doesn't have highly pigmented cuticle, and it's actually quite transparent, and you can see these lateral tracheal branches running the length of the body. They're shown with the big white arrows. And you can see the finer branches coming off as well. And the dark, the black arrows show the tracheal branches are associated with the brain, because the optic lobes of the brain sit right underneath the eyes, which are visible there. An interesting thing about the trachea, because they're cuticle lined, that when an animal molts, the lining of some of the major trachea is pulled out of the body at the same time. So it's quite a complex procedure. And I mentioned spiracles, which are the opening of the trachea to the outside of the body. In the ground plan, there's a pair of spiracles, laterally located spiracles, on each segment of an insect. But that's modified in a lot of different insects. Some insects might only have two pairs of trachea or one pair of trachea. And some insects are a bit... Sorry, I'm saying trachea, spiracles. And some insects have done away with spiracles altogether. And they're able to keep air-filled tubes within their body, but there is no physical connection between these air-filled tubes on the inside of the body and the air on the outside of the body. And it seems that there's liquid is drawn out of the trachea to fill them with air, and that air is taken out of solution from the rest of the insect's body. Just as a note, this is a mosquito that's been attacked by mites. We showed you the spiracles, and I just want you to take a note of the location of the halter there, which is sitting on the metathoracic segment, whereas the wings are sitting on the mesothoracic segment. In the next topic, we'll look at molting, because that's one of the most challenging phases to an insect's life cycle.